So we're back again this morning to our series of messages on the Ten Commandments. These Ten Commandments, as we have discovered, are unique. They were both spoken by and written by God himself. There are, as we've already said this morning, two tablets that are summarized in the words of Matthew chapter 22 and verses 37 to 40. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. These last words show the importance of the commandments. Everything else in Scripture, everything else in the Bible hangs, if you like, on these Ten Commandments. And unless we get these right, then nothing else will be right. Our relationship now, of course, is not simply with these Ten Commandments on their own, but these Ten Commandments with the relationship that we have with Jesus Christ. And also our relationship that we have with one another. So as we look at these Ten Commandments, we see them as our relationship to God through Jesus Christ and our relationship to one another, again, through Jesus Christ. And we're turning our attention now, as we did earlier, to that sixth commandment, which in the authorized version says, thou shalt not kill. Or as most modern versions will put it, you shall not murder. And I want to repeat what I said earlier, and it's this, that at first sight, it's a command we might feel we don't need to worry about. We haven't murdered anybody, we haven't killed anybody, and most of us are never likely to. Perhaps I should say that all of us aren't likely to, not most. But is it as simple as this? It's not, is it? As we've already seen. Well, I want to get something out of the way first of all. And that is, I want to see murder explained. The authorized version says, you shall not kill. And the modern version says, you shall not murder. So what is it? Is it killing or is it murder? There is no doubt in anyone's mind, I'm sure, that the word kill has a much broader meaning than the word murder. We could in fact say that anyone who has murdered, who has been murdered, has been killed. But we could not say that anyone who has been killed has been murdered. So there is a vast difference between the two. A person who has been murdered has clearly been killed. But someone who has been killed, perhaps in a car accident, is not likely to have been murdered. So in this commandment, are we looking at killing or murder? Our first pointer to the answer to this question is found in Deuteronomy chapter 19 and indeed chapter 20. In chapter 19, a clear distinction is made between killing by accident and killing by what we might say design. In chapter 19 of Deuteronomy, rules are laid down for what were called cities of refuge. Many of you will have heard of these cities of refuge. We still think, don't we, of places of refuge. And the reference comes to this biblical cities of refuge. Anyone who killed somebody could flee to one of these cities of refuge. And whilst they were there, they couldn't be harmed. But they were not to be havens for murderers. We have, don't we, those countries where we have extradition rules with. So that if a murderer goes to that country and is living in that country, we can get them extradited, we can get them brought back to this country to face a charge of murder. But there are those countries where we don't have extradition treaties with. And if a murderer goes out to one of those, we cannot bring them back. And that is the same situation as we have in the Old Testament here with these cities of refuge. They weren't to be havens for murderers. And two examples are actually used in chapter 19. The first is of a man who goes with his neighbour to the wood. It's a good job Richard's not here this morning. The first is of a man who goes with his neighbour to the wood to cut trees. And as he swings his axe, the head flies off. It hits his neighbour and kills him. That man can flee to a city of refuge to be safe. For as verse 6 says, what was done without malice aforethought. It's a phrase we often use, isn't it? But that's the New International Version. It was done without malice aforethought. Or as the New King James Version says, he had not hated the victim in the past. So it was clearly an accident. So he could flee to the city of refuge. The second example is of a man who hates his neighbour and who lies in wait for him and kills him. When that man flees to the city of refuge, he is to be returned to his own city for justice. For clearly, there was malice aforethought. It was premeditated. It was pre-planned. So there is a clear distinction being made here between accidental death and murder. And then in chapter 20, we find certain rules for going to war. The Israelites were clearly told in verse 13 of chapter 20 that if any city they attacked surrendered, they should leave them alone. They should just allow them to be their slaves, to be whatever they wanted them to do. But if any city that they attacked refused to surrender, they were to put to death all the men in it. So again, a distinction is being made here. You don't simply go to war to kill people. You go to war to get them to surrender. If they don't surrender, then you start the war. And then in verse 17 of that same chapter, they were told that as far as the nations in the promised land were concerned, they were to completely destroy them. The Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Completely destroy them, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Now we may look at that and we may say that's actually quite terrible. But there was a reason for it. But the point I want to make here is if the sixth commandment is taken in its broadest sense as you shall not kill, why did God give these instructions for his people to break it by killing thousands of people? The answer is surely that the sixth commandment relates to kill in the restricted sense of murder. So is there anything else to back this up? Well, yes, there is, and it's the original words used in the Hebrew and the Greek. In Hebrew, there are at least 10 words, I understand, that can be translated kill. And according to my book of Old Testament word studies, the particular word used here means to break or dash in pieces, to kill, to slay in a violent, unjust manner, to murder. It's never applied to the slaying of brute beasts. And that is something we need to remember as well. There are so many elements here, so many elements that we need to take hold of. We've seen here, haven't we? We've seen that killing can sometimes be legitimate and still not be called murder. We have seen that we can go to war, so there can be killing in war, so this can't be used to support pacifism. We can see that this can't be used in a sense for sometimes vegetarianism. We mustn't kill animals. God gave us responsibility, and we need to use that responsibility wisely. We don't kill animals for the sake of it, as some people do. That's not against the sixth commandment, but it's probably against morality, isn't it? So there are all these elements that are involved here. If we look at my similar book of New Testament word studies, that shows that the original word in Matthew 5:21 has one meaning: to murder. To murder. It seems clear then that what's being prohibited here in this sixth commandment is not all killing, but just that part of it that can be called murder. So, having sought to explain murder, let's now look at murder exposed. This is where it gets interesting and where we come back to what I was saying earlier. If we define murder as the premeditated, violent, unjust killing of another human being, what situations does that expose initially? Well, clearly, it involves all those situations that we see in our newspapers and on our televisions, and that we hear about on our radios, and would want to call murder today. The person who carries a weapon on a robbery and uses it to kill someone. The person who hits an elderly man or woman, or in fact any person, in the course of robbing them and kills them. The person who sexually assaults someone and then kills them for fear of being identified by them. The person who kills their kidnapped victim. The person who puts a bomb in a public place, knowing that people will be there when it goes off. These are many, many clear-cut situations in which the sixth commandment is being broken. You shall not murder. And there are many others that we could consider. But what about some that are considered not so clear-cut? What if we're not driving our car carefully enough? Sometimes there are car accidents. Sometimes they are literally accidents. But at other times, people are not driving properly. We must realise, mustn't we, when we're in a car, or if we're a bus driver, or other situations that we might be in, if we're looking after machinery, that we have to remember that these are machines that can kill. And we have to take care that we don't actually murder somebody by our irresponsible actions. But what, if anything else, does this sixth commandment have to say about war? We've seen already that in the Old Testament, God gave certain rules of war. But we have to remember that those rules were for specific people and for a specific reason, and that they can be taken as a guide for us, but no more. We have to, and it's a very difficult thing, isn't it? And much of this question of murder is very difficult, because we can get ourselves into situations where we are, in a sense, or people get themselves involved in a situation where they are involved in possible murder situations. We may well think back to the Second World War. We were thinking about remembrance, weren't we, last Sunday? And we think of these wars. Well, I suppose if any war could have been called just, it would probably be the Second World War. But we do have to ask questions, don't we? We do have to ask questions when the number killed in that war exceeded 60 million. We have to ask ourselves, why were cities like Dresden and Hamburg, predominantly civilian cities, bombed so much? Why was Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombed? Well, I know cases can be made to support these events. I know it's not easy, but we surely have to be careful that killing doesn't become murder. And we've seen, haven't we, in the recent wars, where some British soldiers have been brought up on murder charges for some of the things they do. These are difficult situations, but we have to be aware of this sixth commandment. And then, of course, there are two great matters that are very much to the forefront of medical ethics today that have to be looked at in the context of thou shalt not murder or you shall not murder. They, of course, are abortion and euthanasia. Does the sixth commandment really speak to these two issues? Again, I have to say, there are lots of factors involved in these issues, but we surely need to be aware and keep our in our minds this sixth commandment. These are very emotive issues, but we must look at them. We must look at them not from what we might consider a logical aspect. We must look at them from the scriptures. We must look at them from God's point of view, not our own. What are we doing here with abortion? What are we doing with euthanasia? We are playing God. We are playing God in killing infants. My understanding of the Bible is that when it doesn't have a word for fetus. No such thing as a fetus as far as the Bible is concerned. It's a being, it's a child. And so we have to think in terms of what we're doing in euthanasia and abortion. We are killing the young, we're killing the old, or those that we feel can't be cured. They're difficult issues, but we have to come down and say, this is what God says. You shall not murder. Our lives are in his hand. Our times are in his hands. My mother-in-law wanted to be with her Lord for the last several years. But she had to wait his time. And that's what we need to remember. On the question of abortion, it's interesting to note that one commentator quotes an example of some medical students attending a seminar. They were attending a seminar on the subject and given a case study. The case study that the lecturer gave was this. The father of the family has syphilis and the mother tuberculosis. They have had four children already. The first is blind. The second died. The third is deaf and dumb. And the fourth has tuberculosis. The mother is now pregnant with her fifth child and is willing to have an abortion if that is what you suggest. What would your advice be? Students overwhelmingly voted to terminate the pregnancy. And to this, the lecturer responded, "Congratulations, you have just murdered Beethoven." That's an exception. But we can see, can't we, how those that come into the world, that some people would have said they need to be aborted before they're born. How they come into the world and they light up the life of the family, even though it may be only for a short while. It's God's time, not ours. This command also speaks to us of another difficult situation, and that is suicide. For what is suicide but self-murder? The ancient church, of course, refused to give a Christian burial to someone who had committed suicide, but the church today takes a somewhat freer stance. And in a sense, so it should. Because there are so many issues here, aren't there? But basically, a suicide is a breaking of this commandment. We could debate these matters, couldn't we? We could debate them as long as we like. But ultimately, it comes down to you shall not murder, and we have to try and respond to that commandment. It also needs to be said, I think, that it's not just the act of murder that makes us guilty of breaking this commandment. It's also broken by anyone who has the act carried out on their behalf. That should be obvious, shouldn't it? And in a sense, it can also be said of those who just stand by and watch some things happen. So it's exposed in these issues. And then I want to move on finally to this one, which is murder expanded. In our reading this morning from Matthew 5, we saw that Jesus, looking at this commandment, and I made reference to it in verses 21 and 22, says this, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, 'Do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment.' But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, 'Raca,' is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift." Can I just mention one other thing here? And that is when it says, "Do not murder," and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. That judgment in the Old Testament was murder, murder for murder. There is a sense in which the Bible says you can have capital punishment. It's just the mercy that stops that capital punishment coming in at the moment. But what is Jesus doing here in these words 21 and 22 of Matthew 5? Is he disagreeing with the sixth commandment? No, he isn't. So what is he actually doing here? He's rebuking the Pharisees and teachers of the law for missing out on something very fundamental contained in this commandment. And wasn't that so true of those religious leaders in the Old and New Testament? They skated round the laws. They skated round the issues. And we can be just as evasive where the law of God is concerned. What the teachers of the law were doing were concentrating only on the outward deed of murder, of murdering a person, and forgetting to deal with the root cause of the problem. And that is so often the case today, isn't it? We try to deal with the actual carrying out of the thing instead of looking at the root problem. You can't get rid of the weeds simply by cutting off the tops. You've got to dig down, get to the root of the weed, bring up the weed, get rid of it. And so often when we're dealing with problems, we're dealing with what's on the surface and not with what is underneath. Jesus is saying here that the outward deed begins with an inward thought. The inward thought here is one of anger. It's one of hatred. And left to its own devices, anger and hatred leads to bitter words. And bitter words can so easily mature into murder, whether it's an actual murder of a person or whether it's a murder in our hearts, a murder of that person in our hearts, the hatred that we have for them, the disgust that we have for them, the feelings that we have for them. And the warning here is plain to see if we look at it. We must each examine our hearts to ensure that our thoughts concerning our brothers and sisters are right before God. And if there is anything wrong in our relationships, then we ought to put them right before we come into God's presence again. Our problem is that we let things fester in our hearts, don't we? And when we've got those things festering in our hearts, they just destroy us. Have you heard of those people who have had a disagreement in the past? And when they meet in the street, well, they don't meet, they pass one another in the street. They just look the other way. They don't simply say good morning because there's so much bitterness in their heart. And so it goes on. You can see how it goes on. You know how it goes on because it's happened to you. It's happened to me. And we need to make sure that we get right before God. And in addition to the inward thought and outward action of murder, there is this other aspect to it. There is a sense in which the commandments are, of course, the chief or representative acts of whole families of sins. The family of murder, for example. It includes the murder of affection. People refuse to give their affection to people. And that causes great harm, both to the person who's refusing to give that love and also to the person who's not getting it. Perhaps a mother or father not giving the love to their child, or perhaps a wife or a husband not giving it to the other partner. These things can so easily happen for all sorts of reasons. The murder of affection, the murder of self-respect. We can destroy a person by saying things behind their back that aren't true. The same with reputation. We can destroy a reputation, murder a reputation of somebody. We can murder somebody by their liberty, restricting their liberty. We can murder their happiness. We can murder their harmony, both in the natural and the spiritual life. So many aspects to this word murder that we need to get hold of. In Exodus chapter 21, we can see that if anyone attacked his father or mother, he had to be put to death. And likewise, anyone who even cursed his father or mother must be put to death. Why is he saying that? Why is God saying that? In those days, the family was the thing. For children to act in this way was to humiliate their parents. It was to strip their parents of their dignity. And God says, to do such a thing is murder. And it's possible in a number of ways, particularly by our words, which is why we had the lips up there earlier, particularly by our words, but also by our actions, to murder these other things that I've mentioned. So are we guilty of this expanded murder? Murder explained. It is murder, not killing. Murder exposed. It can be seen in abortion, euthanasia, suicide, may be seen in war, and perhaps even in other things. Murder expanded. It's not just the act of taking someone's life, but also of having hatred towards someone. It can also be the taking of someone's reputation, and so on. It is a negative commandment, but this negative commandment requires a positive response. That response is to be one that cares for life, that cares for our own life, that cares for the life of others, and seeks the best in life for all. Remember, there is more to "you shall not murder" than at first meets the eye. So how is your keeping of this commandment?